This is Ancient Afterlives, surprisingly modern ideas from the ancient world. This episode is hosted by Joe Scales and Ellie Vivian, and our guests are Ellie Lyle and Susie Rees.
Glad to be able to introduce our two guests today. We have Susie Rees, who is just about to start her third year of her PhD at King's College London, focusing on cosmetics in the Hebrew Bible and the ancient Near East, and Eleanor Lyle, who recently completed her PhD at the University of Nottingham on colour perception in the Hebrew Bible and ancient Greek text, and is now based at the University of Exeter. Welcome both.
Hi, how are you doing?
Hi. Thanks so much for having us.
You're welcome. It's nice to talk to you about this. How did this come together? How did you kind of first start talking about potentially doing a collaborative volume, or even before that? How did this kind of idea, how was it birthed?
So we were both working on articles on the Queen of Sheba at the time, and it was in the midst of lockdown and library closures and all of those horrible things everyone's had to suffer through. And we noticed we both kept posting in the same sort of Facebook groups and common sort of help groups saying, has anyone got access to this article? Has anyone got access to that article? And then we kept picking up on the fact that we were asking for the same articles and same things, and got chatting about it, really. And then from there, we were sort of talking a little bit about how little material there was on the Queen of Sheba and why she'd been overlooked quite as much as we felt she had.
Yeah, and it just kind of took off from there. Our conversation just kept going and going, and then we realised we went down the woman and marginalised voices, and research interest was also lacking. And then we just thought, oh, this could be a really fun idea to press and research further. It then turned into unnamed people, to fill some gaps that we hadn't even thought of. Like the Queen of Sheba for us seemed pretty obvious, I think, after doing a lot of research on her. But there are just so many examples that just have not been researched. We're really excited about it.
So, yeah, it strikes me a little bit interesting that this quite politically influential figure is then marginalised through the lack of naming. So you've got some other kind of potential characters that you'd anticipate calls from, and most of them seem to be Hebrew Bible, but there's some New Testament ones. How are you thinking about the scope of this volume? What kinds of texts, corpora, materials are you thinking about?
Well, obviously our background is both in Hebrew Bible, so our first draft of this was very influenced by that, and we sort of picked through, there's a wonderful dictionary of women, and we started picking through that and looking for unnamed examples. And once you start looking for it, you just start finding them everywhere. The Woman of Endor, and the Lovers in the Soul of Songs, the Queen of Heaven, the Suffering Servant, the list kind of went on and on. And the more we talked about it, the more excited we got, the more we came up with more and more examples. And then when we brought it to the journal, the editor, Meredith Warren, said, actually, hey, have you guys thought at all about opening this up to New Testament? Because there are so many examples that, obviously, that's her area of specialty. And when we were chatting with her about how the journal issue would, what it would look like and what our goals were for it, she was saying, you know, have you thought about the woman in Revelation, all the kind of figures that become named, and the issues of Midrash and naming in later periods and things like that. And it just, the more we talked about it with different people who brought their own expertise and wisdom to the table, the more of an exciting and rich topic we kind of felt we were beginning to tap into, which was really exciting.
That's so interesting. So what made you choose that specific journal? Did you have conversations about where you might want to pitch it, and how did you go about pitching? I know you just mentioned you got in touch with Meredith Warren. Yeah, what was the process for those of us who know very little about this sort of area?
Well, we also knew very little. We had a really exciting topic and did not know what to do with it. And we did not have the means or kind of the direction that we kind of needed to push this through. And so after speaking to various people, it was just okay. There were so many options that we could have taken, whether it was to invite a select amount of people and then create, you know, an edited volume, or to do kind of some kind of open access, but still with invited people. And we kind of wanted this to be, we really wanted to emphasize the open call, because we obviously knew a handful of people, but we don't know everybody, and we don't know everybody's ideas, and they might have a completely different perspective, as I said, that we've never thought of before. So we really wanted to stress this open call. And it just came about that after kind of looking around at where did this open access and open calls, that perhaps plugging a more interdisciplinary perspective, because we were looking at gender theory and queer theory and all these different kinds of approaches to these characters, we were plugging the interdisciplinary side of things. And from that, we came up with a draft call for papers and just kind of very formally, informally dropped Meredith a lovely email just to say, would this be something that you were interested in? And tried to plug how exciting and enthusiastic we were about it. And she just cottoned on. And honestly, without her, we wouldn't be obviously having this volume. And the call for paper is just 10 times better than what it was than when we originally sent it to her through her ideas. And this is why we're stressing that we just are really welcoming so many contributions from all different kinds of backgrounds from all across the world, and just really want to kind of collaborate on this interdisciplinary idea.
I think it was also really important for us that when we were looking at why hasn't this work been done, we're beginning to feel that these are questions that often get overlooked, and the values of the journal really aligned with the project as we saw it. The kind of social justice sort of slant towards the Jibs volumes as well really spoke to our research and sort of seemed to kind of dovetail with what we were hoping to do as well. So I think that was part of the reason we approached them first off, and obviously we were so lucky that they said yes, so that was fantastic.
So did you kind of draft a kind of potential call for papers between yourselves and then send that, and it was just like unsolicited out of the blue? I guess they have like a public email thing to send anything like that too, but you kind of put together the idea first and pitched almost a call for papers.
Yeah, exactly. It just originally started out as a blank Word document with all of our ideas bullet pointed down, really rushed. And just as we got more excited, capital letters were involved and bold and underlined because we wanted to plug that kind of emphasis. And then, we drafted it into something a bit more substantial and a bit more relevant and sent it to a couple of close friends who we were very fortunate to have to look over it and just to check that we weren't going crazy and this wasn't an idea that we just kept unraveling in our heads, but was actually, it could be done and was relevant. And particularly with Jibs in mind now, we had to plug all these different aspects to ensure that we fulfilled their criteria. And then, after a few more drafts, it went off for Jibs, which is really exciting.
I think when you're looking for a journal, it's worth looking. Jibs obviously has it emblazoned on the website that they do welcome proposals from guest editors, and I'm sure there are other journals out there that do similar things, and it's worth just having a little look around, looking at all these websites and bits and pieces and trying to work out what works well.
Yeah, because I mean, we went back and forth a few times. We were a bit worried, in all honesty, about we don't have New Testament, Midrashic, Septuagint experience necessarily as much as we do Hebrew Bible together. So we were really concerned that actually if we received a New Testament essay, we would have no idea what it's saying. It'd be new to us. So we were back and forth for quite some time as to whether Jibs was right for us in terms of that, or whether just a Hebrew specialized journal issue was better. And in the end, we worked out that we can have, because it's all, I'm sure we'll come onto this, the process of it, but because it's blind peer reviewed, we can get New Testament peer reviewers, right? So that's really exciting. That really kind of pushed us over the line, and was really helpful to have that kind of backing.
Yeah, so let's go into the process a little bit, if that's okay. So what would people expect if they submitted something? What happens next? What happens to their article?
So our first big plug is that the deadline is the 20th of December. So we're looking for lots and lots and as many as possible submissions by then. What will happen is Ellie and I will read through them and then try and approach people who we think would be good peer reviewers who will blind peer review them. There are two Google forms that we have, one to collect anonymized manuscripts, and we'll go through and obviously check that there's no details that might identify the author before sending them on to our peer reviewers, who will return them to us with their comments and feedback, which we'll send back to the authors for them to return us, hopefully, some updated and revised drafts, which is really exciting. It's, I think, pretty standard, I from my own limited experience of being on the author end of things, of most other journals. And of course, if anyone has any questions, I think we've already had a couple of people who've written to us and sort of asked questions about what we were looking for or whether the topics they had in mind would be a good fit. So people are always welcome to approach us. We want to have as many people as involved. And if you're sort of on the fence or not sure, please get in touch. We don't bite. We absolutely love to hear from you, and we'll answer your question as best we possibly can.
How many contributions are you kind of expecting, hoping that can be published? I guess that's a difficult answer really without having any in, but is there like a set length for how big the issue will be?
I think the beauty of it being an online journal and open access is that It can be kind of a minimum of around 4 upwards. And we've discussed this with Meredith purely because we have been very fortunate in being able to invite a few contributors, from students to early career researchers to mid-career, and to established professors who have shown an interest. So we've got already a range of contributors that we've invited who have very kindly agreed to submit something. But the open call side, yeah, it's completely open. So we can have, well, we don't know. So that's the exciting and nerve-wracking thing, I think, is that we don't know. But after having, you know, when you just have so many discussions with people and you get excited, so they get excited and they come up with a topic and they're like, yeah, submit something. And then I'm just so scared they won't. So we're really hoping that that does not happen. But equally, we are really excited to see what we do have. And if we get one from an open call, then that's more than we can imagine.
Nice. So in terms of looking more at some of the suggested topics, we seem to cover a whole gamut of different approaches to why people might be unnamed in text and then kind of what later authors do with that. So in terms of like naming and around the Queen of Sheba as perhaps your way into starting to think about this as an issue, what is the kind of lack of naming doing in that story as far as you've kind of thought about it?
That's a really good and really tough question, and hopefully one we'll have a fabulous answer to once we've got the finished journal. My sense, and one of the things that I am particularly excited about, which is just a single strand of many, and I think it'll be really exciting to see the different directions people take it in, but I'm quite interested in unnamed characters that then get named either in later traditions or indeed the kind of monikers that scholars give them to refer to them, and how that shapes our understandings, which is my own personal excited bit. But I mean, there are so many different directions that you could take it, and that I think is what, for me, I think is so exciting and what I'm most looking forward to once we start getting those submissions in, is seeing the different and creative ways other people take it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think for me, when I was looking at the Queen of Sheba purely in a 1 Kings 10 from the Hebrew Bible kind of basis, where, you know, she's this foreign queen visiting the native King Solomon. And actually, when I was researching, you know, this narrative happens, you know, in Josephus, in the New Testament, in lots of Midrashic material, in the Quran. And it's like the Queen of Sheba's there, like that's mad. So, but she's still the Queen of Sheba, really. She might have a different kind of characteristics or different functions in the narrative, but she's still the Queen of Sheba. She hasn't got a name. She's capitalized, I guess, in these kind of texts. But that was when I was like, well, hang on, surely someone's got to know an Arabian queen who's this kind of figure that's done so much or doing so much to affect Solomon. And yeah, she just kind of isn't really. So that was kind of my hit home point, was that she's foreign to Israel. So I guess in to an extent, you expect her not to be named in the Hebrew Bible. But going forward, then, why do her characteristics change? Why isn't she named? It's mad. And yet she has such an important function in the Hebrew Bible. She has such an important function in the narrative, in the Quran particularly. So surely give her a name, or someone make one up, you know, that kind of thing. And then that's the process of naming. It's like we try and name characters, right? So that's just a whole strategy in itself that we're really interested in.
So that's started to make me think about apocalyptic stuff, because I think this kind of happens in Daniel, where you have kind of the king of the north, who's pretty much contextualized as Antiochus the Fourth, at least in some of the passages. But then the very fact that he isn't named in those passages then means that this material tends to be reused in later apocalypse. So figures like the Antichrist, the strength of these characters as typological forms which can be used later, is the very fact that they're unnamed. So you almost don't fix it to one thing. So I'm really interested in how the Queen of Sheba changes over text. And it's almost like this is a stand-in for whatever it needs to be for the purposes of this text, represents some kind of characterization.
I think it's really interesting because in Revelation 18, there's this figure of people are connecting it to the Queen of Sheba. It's a female figure that does quite nasty things, I believe. So you're right, she's again not named, but the connections have been made. Yeah, very interesting.
The Queen of Sheba is quite a prevalent figure in art, and I guess with art it doesn't really matter whether a figure is named or not, because they're portrayed visually rather than through text. So I was wondering if you had any thoughts about that, and whether you might be inviting particular contributions on more reception history.
Definitely. So part of the mandate of the journal is interdisciplinary. So reception history, art history, bringing some of those discussions about visual culture and optics are fantastic ways of interrogating these texts, and we love it. We had a really interesting question on Twitter, actually, because we'd mentioned, obviously, we're looking for contributions that engage with feminist theory and queer theory or post-colonial theory. And someone said, hey, you guys, you've missed off disability studies, which we absolutely had. And they were totally right to call us out on it. And I think that in some ways is such a brilliant moment of illustrating why this journal should be open access, and we'd love as many contributions as possible, because try as we might, we're not going to think of every angle that can really illuminate these texts and these unnamed and uncredited figures. So that's a fantastic idea, Ellie. We'd love to have your contribution on it. Please write something. And likewise, if you're out there listening to this and you think, I have a brilliant idea about how to sort of read an unnamed or uncredited figure through the lens of disability studies, write it. We'd love to have it in our journal.
Yeah, definitely. I think particularly the art history side of any kind of graphic is really interesting, and it's something that I want to know more about, definitely. Particularly like just depictions of you know, the women around Jesus in those kind of paintings. Like, who are they? What, like, can we name them? Can we identify them? Or what is their purpose? What is their function? And, you know, the colours of these paintings and the atmosphere and the mood and the style and everything. I think the only thing that we are obviously definitely all for it and plugging it, and I really want to see these kind of contributions. But any images that you guys do submit, we just ask that they're open access and Creative Commons licensed, because otherwise we can't use them, and that would just really defeat the object, because we want to see them and we want to promote them and we want to promote your work. So that's my only thought on that, but otherwise please go for it.
I like how your title of unnamed and uncredited is kind of connecting these phenomena, I guess, and a lot of the characters who you've identified as unnamed characters are almost background characters, like they function inside someone else's story. So there's almost like this call to recenter marginalized voices and narratives going on, which feels like something the discipline has tried to recover a lot. So particularly things like feminist studies have advanced these kind of readings. So it feels like it fits in with that kind of, let's reimagine these texts as these undercurrents that are going on. But I almost, like, some of them are almost, they're given too much credit in some of the subsequent literature. And like The Woman of Endor, for instance, there's this whole thing that kind of goes on trying to deconstruct her raising of Samuel, and whether this, in rabbinic literature, you know, is this a trick? Is this, you know, the power of God? So there's almost an uncomfortable sitting with the power that many of these, particularly women, have in these texts, and they are just unnamed, even though their actions in the story or the narrative are quite significant and matter for a lot of the characters. But whether this unnaming is actually part of this patriarchal marginalization is not a question there. Sorry.
No, that's okay. I think you're absolutely right, because this is our initial thinking, right? You know, that we've got all these female figures that are, you know, the daughter of a male character or the mother of a male character, they're always in relation to a man, right? So you almost think, okay, well, bring them to the forefront. You know, Potiphar's wife has such a big implication for the narrative of Joseph. Like, give her a name. it's quite interesting in that respect. But I think one thing that we, when we were researching this, and we were speaking to Professor Reinhartz, Adele Reinhartz, who wrote originally on this kind of unnamed aspect. And she was very quick to say that anonymity doesn't always, or we should not assume that that equals marginalization. Okay, so she aims to show that anonymity serves a variety of functions, not all relate to low status, and that it applies to male characters as well, just as often as female characters, which was a big shock to us, okay, because we just thought, oh, it's clearly all the women. When it's not, it's the male characters too. And I think what also came to the light was that the later Jewish tradition kind of takes great pains to, you know, name these unnamed characters, female as well as male. And that's when it gets a bit complicated, okay? So female characters aren't always marginalized, but they are anonymous, okay? So it was a real hit home point that we had. And that was when, you know, draft two of our call for papers came in very handy, and we really had another look at it, just because it was a big shock to us. And when you look at these male figures, you know, in relation to their professional functions, so the eunuchs or the servants or the armor bearers or the messengers, you know, who are male, and they serve just as an important function in that narrative as the daughter of someone or the wife of someone.
I think Queen Sheba, again, is like a fantastic example of that. She doesn't get a name in the Hebrew Bible anyway. I mean, I know later on she's Bilhah and all of the other sort of reception history that surrounds her, but in the Hebrew Bible, she doesn't get a name, but she challenges Solomon. She's got this unimaginable wealth. She's this slippery, difficult character to pin down who, on the one hand, you want to be the strange woman, but was also the wise woman. And she's clearly someone who has this vast amount of power. And yet we never know what her name is. So I think Ellie is so right to press back a little bit on that, that it necessarily equals marginalization, but definitely, nevertheless, I think not problematizes and makes it a complex issue to handle, but I think it's going to make it all the richer to kind of unpick some of those threads.
So in terms of mentioning Adele Reinhardt's work, were there any other kind of influential things that you've read that helped build this as a call and a vision for the volume?
Women in Scripture, the Dictionary of Named and Unnamed Women in the Hebrew Bible, the Apocrypha, Deuterocanonical Books, and New Testament, which I think is Carol Mayer's, Tony Cravan and Ross Shepherd Kramer, was a fantastic springboard for us, certainly when we were in the very early stages of brainstorming this, going through and kind of picking out people and being like, oh my God, look, Woman of Endor, you know, all of these figures that you just sort of, when you read the narratives and sometimes have such, as I think you pointed out earlier, Joe, such central roles in the narrative, it almost doesn't register, I think, sometimes when you read them, that they don't actually get named. So that was quite sort of revelatory for me.
Yeah, what was striking is just how much little work was actually done on this kind of topic as a whole. Admittedly, there are a few articles on particular characters. I know, obviously, Potiphar's wife has received quite a lot of attention. Equally, depending on which approach you're taking, you know, through feminist or through queer studies, you're inevitably going to look at some of these characters as well. It's just more highlighting the fact that this topic as a whole is significant.
It's almost like identified an area for more things to be done, because it's like, oh, here's a little silo of work being done on this unnamed character. So having them all together, I think it's exciting. And I think it'd be good to kind of have you back after publication or when it's in the progress, so we can see what emerges from holding these characters together. And what does that look like? How do these ancient texts work with the concept of anonymity? And is it significant? Do they play with it in different ways? So I think there's a lot of interesting things that potentially come out of this. And building off that, are there any kind of areas you think that maybe biblical studies or like cognate fields that this kind of thinking broadly about almost a category of identity in a text, how that might change how we read these individual figures, individual texts? What are your dreams for the impact of this volume?
I think it's bringing together so many of these characters that I think sometimes get overlooked a little bit, and having it tackled through that notion of identity. I think identity politics and sort of intersectional approaches are definitely coming more to the fore, and it is definitely more of a current movement. And yet we were so surprised when we went looking, because we thought we can't be the first people to have had this idea. And obviously there is Adele Reinhardt's book and there is the dictionary that I mentioned earlier, but we were so surprised at how hard it was to find work on this issue of anonymity. And there is so much in a name, and it was just amazing to us that we were really struggling to find these articles and these books, which maybe says something about us as researchers, but I think actually really means that this is a space that is crying out to be filled, and we want that to be filled by as many different people of different identities as possible, because what we all bring to the text when we read them is different depending on who we are when we read. And I think that is a wonderful thing to celebrate, but also just a diversity of contributions will lead to a really diverse volume. And that's my kind of real hope for it.
I completely echo everything Susie has just said. I'm just really excited. I just want to learn new things. I think for me, when mentioning the Queen of Sheba again, but when I was looking for articles about her, not only was I surprised about how little material there was on her, but when we were asking people, have you got access to this, or does anybody have a PDF of this, or that kind of thing, nobody had it. Nobody has interacted with that material themselves. And these are people that are on similar kind of topics to us in our research, and they're just not covering this kind of characterization or lack of in their research. And I want to learn all about these characters that I've never really interacted with, or that I've just brushed over because they're called the Queen of Sheba. You know, I've just come to terms with the fact that that's her name, but it's not her name. And I want to learn more about them. I want to learn more about how they function in the narrative, or how, you know, just Just tell me something new, and I'm really, really excited to learn, I think is my dream for this. And that's why we just want such a diverse range of contributions, and why our examples in the call for paper are not the only ones. They're just the ones that we could think of. There are so many more, I'm sure of it, that we want to hear from. And if you are unsure about whether your idea may or may not work, please get in contact. Like, we are very happy to be to discuss it with you, and then we can get excited preliminary before the deadline, which is also really exciting.
Have you had any other thoughts since the call for papers has gone out in terms of what other possibilities, what other areas people might explore in their articles? Has anything else popped into your head since you published the call for papers?
We've had a lot of fantastic questions from people who are interested. Someone approached us and said something on the Shepherd of Hermaeus. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right. There was obviously the question on Twitter about disability studies and health and medical anthropology, which we love. Your question earlier about visual reception studies, these are all fantastic ways in. And as Ellie said, we obviously thought of everything we could think of for this call for papers, but I'm sure that is by no means comprehensive, which is why we want as many voices as possible in this volume, because Ellie and I certainly are the be-all and end-all arbiters of what could be said on this topic. We aren't the experts at all, but we really, it's a space we really like to fill that we would love to read. And I think I want to create a volume that I would find exciting to read. And so hopefully other people will also find it exciting.
Yeah, definitely. As we said, that the open call was kind of our primary goal for this journal article, because we don't know everything. But we collectively came up with a list of contributors to invite, purely based on some of their previous research or discussions or topics that we've had with these contributors. And inviting them with a standard email, but was personalised to them in respect of their work and possible ideas they may want to contribute, so they're not out of the blue. And we then had back and forth emails with quite a few of our contributors, which gave us an idea of what they might contribute and the topics around there that, again, we hadn't thought of, which is really exciting.
I just wanted to kind of perhaps clarify something for your call. Are you thinking that the contributions, the submissions will be centered around characters, whether individuals or groups, but specifically persons? Or are you kind of thinking more broad in terms of what do we mean by a name? So, for instance, a scroll found in the Dead Sea, or not in the Dead Sea, a scroll that we've given a name to that isn't really attached to the document, but is kind of put on to try and interpret it in some ways. How broad are you going? What are you thinking?
That's a really interesting question. I hadn't thought about the naming of documents. I think because of where we started when we first started spitballing this, we'd focused quite a lot on characters and individuals. Another avenue that we'd talked about that's perhaps a little bit more conceptual is the idea of the history and the anonymity of your everyday Joe in ancient Israel, and how that can be uncovered through archaeology and some of the socio-scientific approaches, because by the nature of texts, particularly ancient texts, they tend to focus on these named warriors, kings, heroes, people of positions of power, and then you just have the unnamed masses. Naming documents, that's a really interesting question. We definitely consider it, yeah.
Something worth, anyone has that kind of idea, getting in contact with you.
That's really exciting, because where on earth do you start with that? Like, who names them? What are their circumstances? Why have they named it this after what? You know, that kind of thing. Like, I want to know. Tell me about it. Someone do this research.
Just going back to what Susie just said in terms of the masses, is that what you're thinking about with including uncredited? What are you thinking in terms of who's uncredited, and what sort of people or things are you thinking about there?
That's a fantastic question. I think that sort of slightly betrays our hand a little bit on our own political leanings, is the honest way to put that. I was very keen not only to have contributions that address gender politics, but also class and intersectionality. Again, because it's something in our field, partially because of the nature of the text, that we often overlook, I think, sometimes all too easy. I'm as guilty of that as anybody. So I think it also sort of speaks a little bit to what Ellie was saying earlier about that phenomenon of reading a text and not even registering that someone's moniker isn't actually their name, like the Woman of Endor or the Queen of Sheba. And that kind of, I think, strips back that person's agency to some extent. in my mind anyway. But yeah, I really look forward to seeing what kind of research and thinking other people and the directions they take that.
So if people want to submit, we'll attach the link to the call for papers, which has kind of all the details in. What does a contribution look like? What kind of length, formatting? Are there any kind of technical things?
Sure. So articles, we're looking for about 6,000 to 8,000 words for full length. But the journal does also offer short notes of about 1,000 to 5,000 words, including references, if you have a sort of briefer, little succinct point or idea that you'd like. We'd love to hear it.
This is really exciting that it was announced that Jibs were bringing back the short note, and then the week before we're about to submit it to them, and we're like, yes, this is brilliant, because a lot of people we're having these discussions with are like, I don't have time to write 6,000 to 8,000 words. And actually 1,000 to 5,000 is so doable, just to even, you know, point out that this character is significant in some way. And this is really, yeah, a unique opportunity, I think, that we're just really hoping that you guys jump on the bandwagon for.
Yeah, it's absolutely great. The deadline is Monday, the 20th of December. So that's when we'd ideally like to get submissions in. Hopefully it'll be much cooler weather, so writing will not be as stressful as it might have been in the last couple of days. In our 30 degree little sweat boxes. And please get in contact. We love questions. We're so excited about this and we want to share that enthusiasm. So if you have any thoughts, if you aren't sure whether you would like to submit or not, or you just want to bounce some ideas, we would love to hear from you.
So how can people be in touch with you, Susie and Ellie?
So our emails are up on the website with the call for papers. You can also contact us on Twitter, either via the journal or via our Twitter handles.
So my Twitter handle is Eleanor C. Lyle, E-L-L-E-N-A-C-L-Y-E-L-L, because my name is very hard to spell. And Susie, yours is?
I am at Reese, R-E-E-S. Susie, S-U-S-Y, because if Ellie thought she had a tricky name to spell, you should try having Susanna Reese as a name.
And is there anything else you want to plug, like any articles you've got coming out, any talks you're giving coming up?
Well, we've banged on about Queen of Sheba quite a lot, and I think we're quite happy to say that both of our articles got accepted. You'll be seeing those out shortly, which is really exciting, and hopefully you can have a glimpse into what's to come from our point of view on the Queen of Sheba.
They'll be published in Hebrew Studies.
Yeah, it's for the special journal issue on drag queens, the power and gender one in the biblical world.
Congratulations, that's awesome.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Ancient Afterlives. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can email ancientafterlives@gmail.com or find us on Twitter. Thanks for listening.